The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 26 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello and welcome to episode 26 of The Catholics of Oz. I'm your host, Lindsay Sant, and joining me today again, we've had two episodes together so far this year, but joining me again is Jerry. Jerry, how are you going?
G'day, Linz. Good to be here.
Excellent. And let's celebrate today. I think, Jared, when we got you back on the podcast, I mentioned something about dancing elephants and red carpets and fireworks.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Caroline, it's your turn. Welcome back to the podcast, Caroline.
Yay. Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. So, Caroline, you were doing a few episodes with me at the end of last year. So, Jerry had to take a break. Then you had to take a break. So
yes. I had a very, very busy summer holiday. Yeah. House moving time. So yes, had a lot going on.
Yeah, it's always busy when you're moving house, isn't it?
Oh yes, I don't want to do it again ever.
yeah. All right, so it's good to get the bands back together for an episode. So before we begin, I just wanted to remind everyone to like the Catholics of Oz on the SQPN Facebook page. Don't forget to retweet our episodes on Twitter and to leave us comments on those platforms as well. You can subscribe to, I'm going to pull back the curtain here. On my notes here, I've got Apple Podcasty when it should say Apple Podcasts. So that's a typo that's just thrown me off there. But you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and your favorite podcast apps. We are also on YouTube. So if you just look for SQPN on YouTube, all of our episodes get posted there. Just don't forget to hit the bell so that you get notifications. And you can also leave us feedback on iTunes and other podcast directories, which helps to grow our audience and to meet new people, which is what we always love doing. So let's get started with Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, Father. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one God, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So for today's Faith Beyond Borders, we wanted to focus on February the 8th. So we're recording the day after that. But we wanted to focus on a feast day, which is in the church on February the 8th. And it's the feast day of St. Josephine Bakhita. And she's a Sudanese woman, or I should say was, who was basically a victim of human trafficking. She came to faith during her journey. But we thought it would be good to focus on her for a couple of reasons. One, because her story is amazing, and I think a lot of people should hear it. And another reason is because her feast day coincides with what Pope Francis started a handful of years ago. And it's basically an international day of prayer against human trafficking and to raise awareness for human trafficking as well, which is still a big issue in our world today. I thought I might just start, before we talk about her story, with a couple of statistics. So first of all, around the world, there can be between 20 to 40 million people who are living in modern day slavery. And this is obviously illegal activity. So there was legal slavery a long, long time ago, but this is illegal slavery. And the number is actually not entirely known because there's no easy way to collect data on how many people are actually in slavery. Quite a lot of them are children as well who are trafficked. And a lot of the reason for trafficking and slavery can be including things like forced labor, forced marriage, prostitution, and organ removal. So it's a terrible human crime in our modern world. And St. Josephine Bakhita was a victim of this as well. And she went through some pretty awful things as a part of her being trafficked. But Jerry, I might throw over to you. You've got some notes on just a bit of her background and some of her story. So can you share that with us?
Yeah, sure. So when we were looking and planning this topic, I read up on her and I found her story. Like you say, it's a fascinating story. And it turned out that I ended up sort of making quite a few notes and stuff on her life story. And then when we decided to do the podcast, rather than just focus on the human trafficking and slavery side, they're actually focused on the saint whose feast day was yesterday. So, all right. So she was born around 1869 in a place called Darfur, which is in Western Sudan, in the village of Olgossa. Now, her father was brother of the village chief, and she had three brothers and three sisters. In 1877, when she was about 7, 8, 9 years old, it's a little fuzzy. Now, she was abducted by Arab slave traders, and she later recounted, "I was 9 years old. I was walking in the fields with my friends, a bit far away from home. Two strangers appeared from behind a fence. One said to my friend, 'Let the small girls go into the forest to pick me some fruits. You continue walking. We'll catch up with you soon.' His plan was to fool my friend so he could kidnap me, and she would not be there to tell. I did what I was told. Once we were in the forest, two men came from behind. One grabbed me vigorously, the other pulled out a knife and held it to my side. 'If you cry, you'll die. Follow us.' I was terrified." Now, she wasn't able to remember her birth name after this abduction, and she took the name Bakita, and that was given to her by the slavers, and in Arabic that means lucky one or fortunate. She was forced to walk barefoot for about 960 kilometers or 600 miles to another town within Sudan. Now, to walk barefoot in a place like Sudan, Sudan is just south of Egypt, in the middle of Africa, which Africa's a hot place all around, and Sudan's no exception. Even in winter, the average temperature is 30 degrees Celsius or 85 degrees Fahrenheit. So to walk that far, you know, almost 1,000 kilometers in bare feet, you know, horrible at any point in time, but even worse because of the weather. So over the next 12 years, she had 6 different owners. Some of them treated her well, like the Italian vice consul at the time, who was her 5th owner, and some treated her poorly, like the 4th owner, a Turkish general whose mother-in-law and wife were cruel to their slaves. Under this owner, she was forced to endure being marked by deep cuts from a razor, and the wounds were filled with salt to endure permanent scarring. And I believe she actually ended up with about 114 different scars on her body, arms, and legs. Eventually, while living in Italy, her 6th owner wished to visit her husband, who was in Sudan at the time, after he had purchased a large hotel. So the family were in the process of emigrating from Italy to Sudan. Now, the villa they had lived in Italy, had been sold, and so rather than take Bakita and the family's 2-year-old daughter Alice, known as Mamina, to Sudan with her, Bakita's mistress left them both in the care of the Canossian sisters in Venice, and this turned out to be the first real step in being released from slavery. When her mistress returned from Sudan, Bakita quite obviously refused to leave. She'd been treated extremely well by the sisters, unsurprisingly, and she'd had her first experience of Christianity. And she later recalled, "Those holy mothers instructed me with heroic patience and introduced me to that God who from childhood I had felt in my heart without knowing who he was." And so the battle for possession of Bakita had reached some high places. So Italy being a monarchy back then, the Italian king's attorney general was called in, as well as the Cardinal of Venice. However, on the 29th of November 1889, an Italian court ruled that Bakita had never legally been a slave, and finally, she was free to choose her own path for the first time in her life. So, what did she do? She asked to be baptized. So, in the next few months after her freedom, she took the name Josephine Margaret for her baptism and confirmation on the 9th of January 1890, when she was 21 years old. She received Holy Communion from the Archbishop Giuseppe Sarto, funnily enough, the future Pope Pius X. Nice connection there, I thought.
There you go, yeah.
Cool. So within 4 years, she'd entered the novitiate of the Canossian Sisters and took her vows 3 years later. And in 1902, she was assigned to the Canossian Convent at Scio, where she would spend the rest of her life. Her days were filled in service as cook, sacristan, and doorkeeper, as well as being in frequent contact with the community. I love this part here. She was once asked, "What would you do if you were to meet your captors?" Without hesitation, she responded, "If I were to meet those who kidnapped me, and even those who tortured me, I would kneel and kiss their hands. For if these things had not happened, I would not have been a Christian and a religious today. Bakita passed away on the 8th of February 1947. For 3 whole days, her body was on public display as thousands paid their respects. Canonization was petitioned immediately, and Pope John XXIII opened the case in 1959. Pope John Paul II declared her venerable on 1st of December 1978 and blessed on the 17th of May 1992. Finally, she was canonized as a saint on the 1st of October 2000 and is the patron saint of Sudan and human trafficking survivors.
Yeah, thank you for that. And that quote, I think, is beautiful too. The model of forgiveness that she is, considering the trauma that she went through, and you even described, you know, what the slavers had done to her body as well. It's quite awful. So for her to forgive and to say, in a sense, thank God this happened because I came to know Christ through it all, is quite amazing. And I think it's important that we do hold her up as a model for many things, for being a great woman of faith, but also as Pope Francis has linked to her story to the plight of modern human trafficking as well. Caroline, you said that you did a bit of research on, now that we're talking about the modern side of things, on how we could look for products and things that we have, or when we're shopping at least, we could try to make sure products that we have are not built by slave labor, sweatshops and things like that. So what did you find in your research?
Yeah, so, you know, as someone who is a consumer who likes to purchase goods, namely clothing, but I mean, I think it's good. I think it's good. Well, I'm the main purchaser of the house as well, you know, for especially now we've moved into a new house and, you know, I've had to buy several, you know, bits of furniture and whatever else. You know, I think it's important that we are conscious about where the goods that we purchase come from and what kind of effect it has on the people who make them. And, you know, because we don't want people to, you know, make our clothing and, you know, other goods under, you know, in bad conditions, you know, in slavery conditions, you know, and all of that kind of thing. So you can actually look up any brand on a site called Good On You, and it's Good On You, all one word, .eco, and they will give you a rating in terms of how these products are affected in terms of, well, 3 categories really, what impact the production of these goods have on the planet, are they, do they affect animals, but most importantly, they look at the impact on workers in the supply chain, including the company's policies on child labor, forced labor, safety in the workplace, and all of that kind of thing. And so you can type in any brand you like. So I've typed in a few Australian brands and one New Zealand brand that I really enjoy shopping from. And I was actually a little bit shocked.
Yeah.
I may need to reconsider a couple of brands that I shop from because while, you know, they may be affordable, they may not be actually treating, you know, from the first steps of production, may not be treating people in the best way, or they may not be in completely ethical conditions. You know, I mean, factories in Australia, most of them, well, there's not many left now, but if you are working in a factory in Australia, you know, there are certain conditions that, you know, have to be met. Like, you know, people should be able to be paid well. They should be able to have lunch breaks. They should be able to have, you know, have an 8-hour day, not a, you know, a long day. And then, you know, like in other countries, I've seen documentaries of production of goods where people work basically from very early in the morning to very late at night. They don't get paid very much. They don't get to eat very well. They basically live and sleep in the factories. So, and we don't want our goods to be made, you know, in those conditions. We want people to be paid well. We want people to be able to eat and have a nice life just like we do. You know, so yeah, you type your brand in and a rating will be given in terms of people, planet and animals, and you can make a decision whether you want to continue buying from that brand or not. And I would suggest as a further step, if the brand you really like you know, are not meeting, you know, not having a good rating, not a high rating in terms of these three, why not contact them and say, look, yeah. I'm really concerned about this. I love your brand, but I'm not pleased with the way, you know, the people are treated who, you know, manufacture these goods. So, I mean, maybe we can't directly do something about slavery, but this is something small that we can do. I mean, why sit back and say, I'm just not going to buy from this brand. Maybe we can take a step and maybe, you know, contribute to improving where, you know, where these goods come from.
Yeah, and Pope Francis, you know, when he inaugurated this day, it's not just it's like you were saying, it's not just about praying about human slavery, which is what he wants us to do, but he also said the day is about raising awareness against it as well. And so, like you were saying, if we took a proactive step to contact brands that we like to say, look, I love the work that you're doing, but I don't love the source. I don't love how you're obtaining, you know, your goods. Can you guarantee that you won't be using human slavery or that you're you know, compliant, you know, that you're fair? There's also ethical shopping. Like even in our supermarkets, they have fair trade products as well. So I've seen lots of fair trade tea and coffee, which I'm relieved about because those are my lifelines. So I staple you.
Most people's.
But the idea of fair trade is that a person who, you know, makes that product for you, you know, whichever part of the world they come from, they're paid fairly, they're treated well, they get the money they deserve for their product, and you know, and they have the same access to income that we would have as well. And so that's another thing that we can do. Now, we can't do fair trade for everything, unfortunately, but it's good to be able to take a step to move towards trying to be a bit more ethical with the products that we buy as well. Because I don't think anyone at the end of the day would sleep well knowing that things around their house were made because of, you know, slave-like conditions and sweatshops and things like that. We wouldn't be too cool about that.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I just wanted to add as well, two years ago it was, we had a mass at one of our junior campuses. So when I say junior, these are students between the ages of 12 and 15, so year 7 to year 9 for us. And it was just before the weekend of the feast day of St. Josephine Bikita. And so we had a Salesian priest, quite elderly, beautiful man though. And the reading was You Are the Salt of the Earth, which was, you know, our Sunday reading today. So as a symbol, he had some salt on the altar and he used it for his homily. But he also spoke beautifully about St. Josephine Bikita. And at the campus where he was doing the mass, we actually have a higher proportion of students from South Sudan. Some of them have, you know, refugee background, things like that, or have come from, you know, some pretty awful things and things like that. So he, after his homily, he got every single one of them to come up on the stage, and there were quite a few. It was a very crowded stage. And he looked at them and he said, "You guys, you are the light of the world. You know, you're the salt of the earth." He said, "You are Christ right here for us." And it was an amazingly beautiful gesture. And then he said, "I want to shake every single one of your hands as you leave the stage." He said, "No, I don't. Actually, here's what I want to do." And he went and grabbed this little box of salt. And as they went off the stage, he gave them all a grain of salt. He said, "You are the light of the world. You're the salt of the earth." And, you know, it took a bit of time, but it was such a beautiful gesture and such an amazing thing. You know, so he linked that beautiful saint, you know, from their country to them and said, "This is you. You're the light of the world. You're the salt of the earth." So I think that's a gesture that a lot of them, it would have stuck with a lot of them for a very long time. So quite a beautiful thing. Is there anything else that we wanted to say about this, or should we move on? Jerry, you got any other thoughts? Or
no, I think we covered it pretty well.
Okay.
Great.
All right. So let's roll on. So Caroline, we're going to roll over to you because we're going to talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So, Caroline, you're going to do a bit of sun science for us today.
Yes, and, today's.
Yeah, and this is very, very exciting stuff because I did watch a documentary that's related to this recently. So tell us about the sun, Caroline. What's going on?
Yeah, so this segment today is all about the sun and a very exciting development. We have just been shown one of the most detailed, no, probably the most detailed and highest resolution photo of the sun ever taken. This was taken from a new solar telescope in Hawaii. The construction of the telescope began in 2012 and it's just started becoming online now.
Wow.
And yes, it's the Daniel K. Inouye Solar Telescope, located on the Halikala volcano on the island of Maui in Hawaii. Another reason to want to go to Hawaii now.
Yes, so many reasons.
So many reasons. One day I'm going to get there. So this telescope is quite large. It's actually the biggest solar scope on Earth. It's got a primary mirror of 4 meters round. So that's about 13 feet. That is very large. Mm. So it's able to gather heaps of light and get us some really good images. So what does this image look like? It looks actually quite delicious.
It does. It really does. Yes.
It really does. So the image that they gave us, and there's some video too of it, it actually looks like honeycomb or like bubbling caramel. but it's not as simple as that. It's actually bubbling plasma, heated, superheated plasma full of energy and light and magnetic energy. And you can see this, you know, convection currents of plasma bubbling up to the surface and back down again. And each of these bubbles is about the size of Texas, they're saying. Wow. So now we know that the sun is massive. So it's got all, it's covered in Texas, just all over it. So it's just, you know, and so when you, it's easy to think when you're looking at these images that it's, you know, just these little bubbles, but they're actually super, super massive. And, you know, the sun is super, super massive. So, can't take it lightly. So as we see the convection currents of the bubbling up plasma, you've got some light yellow regions, which are like the really super hot areas. And then you've got the, you know, they've got like a black borders or, you know, darker borders, which is where the plasma is cooling down and going back down to the surface of the sun again. And so basically, the motion of these plasma creates magnetic fields and electrically charged particles, and it's responsible for the dynamic nature of the sun. The sun, we just look at it, you know, from from Earth, and we see a yellow sphere, but it's actually a raging ball of energy and movement, and it's just dynamic. It doesn't just sit there; it's just continually producing energy. In the form of light and heat and particles, and the particles, you know, spurting out and creating solar wind into the, you know, and affects the Earth. And that's why they want to study it. You know, the solar wind can affect satellites and communications and electrical grids on Earth here. So the more we know about it, the better prepared we can be for solar flare, solar events. Yeah, so that's really one great thing that we saw this week. Now, Lindsay, I think you remember, do you remember watching a documentary we watched ages ago? One was The Sun and one was The Moon. I think they were BBC documentaries.
Yeah, there was a set that we bought, I think.
Yeah.
And on DVD.
On DVD, that's right. I think that's probably what sparked, definitely for me, my interest and love of the sun. And so this was about the project from NASA called SOHO, which is the Solar Observatory. And Solar Heliospheric Observatory. I'm sorry.
No, you have podcasting notes here, right there.
Yes. So what they do is they've got a probe out in space, and they have different images of the sun at different wavelengths. And so you'll get different color pictures. So you'll say green and red and yellow, blue and orange and yellow. And each different image will give us like a different aspect. So you can see different details of the sun, and all of them show these amazing, you know, rings of magnetic energy and solar flares bursting out. And there's one as well, they have, so they basically block out the sun itself, like with a ring, and all you can see is actually the solar flares. So these massive big solar flares blowing out energy. So when the magnetic rings break, because they don't stay as rings, they're too unstable, they just break, you know, and that's when all the charged particles come spewing out at the Earth. So with that project and this images that we're getting from the telescope, you know, we can get some more idea of what's going on. And then there's another Parker Solar Probe, which is more recent, that was launched in 2018.
I have to jump in and say this is amazing. Yeah.
Yes, this is so exciting. I was excited when I first heard about this as well, and I know you've been going on about it for you know, since you heard about it.
Tell everyone about the Parker Solar Probe, please. Get excited.
So this is how we can touch the sun. Okay, so it's going near the heliosphere of the sun, quite close in, and I think at this closest perihelion, it's called, so like the closest approach to the sun, it'll be about 4 million miles. It doesn't sound very close, but is very close. And we can get, you know, touch the particles, measure the particles, find out why the atmosphere of the sun is hotter than the surface. So, like the surface is thousands of degrees and the atmosphere is millions of degrees. Why is that? You know, so getting some clues to that. Now, the Parker Solar Probe actually has taken recordings of the sound of the particles. So there's many different kinds of waves caused by these particles. So you can hear electrons riding waves, and you can hear pressure waves and all that kind of thing. So Dom, I don't know if you want to insert some here so everybody can hear what the Parker Solar Probe has been recording for us. Beautiful sounds. Yes, and then so there's another solar orbiter at the moment too, which is going to be launched on the 10th of February, which is going to join these other missions, which to give us more information on the sun. And this one's called the Solar Orbital, and it is to be launched by the European Space Agency. And awesome. This one has, so we know the Parker Probe has, you know, a huge heat shield in front of its instruments, you know, so obviously it's going very close to the sun and the instruments can't touch the sun otherwise, you know, directly, otherwise they melt and they won't work. Well, this one has the same kind of shield. It's not going to go as close to the Parker Solar Probe, but it will be connecting and working with this solar probe. And what it's going to do, it's going to have peepholes in its shield. So it's got more instruments on it. They're actually going to have some cameras, and one thing is going to, that's really cool, it's going to measure iron. So it's going to try and measure some elements created directly by the sun, which is really cool. And, yeah, so that one's going to be really cool, another one to look out for. So, yeah, very exciting time for sun science at the moment. I could talk more about it. I could just keep talking about it, but that's a rundown of what's been happening right now. And we'll provide some articles, and please read up on them. Keep YouTubing. We were YouTubing yesterday about the sun, and we just kept going and going and going, and it was just so great. Those images of the sun, they just blow you away. Just amazing.
They blow you away with their solar winds.
Sorry. Oh, yes.
You're welcome, everyone. Could I recommend as well that if you have a Disney Plus account, National Geographic section, they have a documentary on the Parker Solar Probe. It's only about an hour. And it goes into the construction of the probe and the journey of the probe to get to the sun. And it stops about there. It doesn't talk about the information they collected. But it's really fascinating because it talks about the goals they want to achieve and the sun science that they'll be doing. And I was really fascinated by that heat shield that you spoke about, Caroline, because they talked about how they made it and what it was and how behind the heat shield, it's only 30 degrees Celsius.
Yes, isn't that amazing? Which
is amazing. It really is. And that close to the sun. It's brilliant. And there's one little really cup. Amazing. Did you see that? There's a cup that sits over the top of the shield. And that I think it allows particles from the sun to pass through it and it measures them or something. Yes. But
and, yeah, it goes through the design of this little cup. And that's how it's touching and tasting the sun. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That is just, And I think, one of the creators of it was so proud of his achievement. He'd been working on it for so long. But good on him. Yeah, that is an achievement. That's an unprecedented piece of equipment right there. That's amazing.
Yeah, they spent so many years on it that they think of it like their child now, this probe that they spent so many years to send it up into space and everything. And it's not a big probe. It's a pretty small thing, like compared to other things that they've launched, which is interesting.
Yeah, but it's so important too. I mean, we've never been able to touch the sun before. This is all new science, you know. It's all stuff that we just don't know. We don't know a lot about the sun, and the more we know, the more we know about Earth in a way, because the sun really affects the Earth. So the more science we can get, the better. And it's just amazingly interesting. I mean, I love the missions to planets and all of that. Like, those are so interesting, but the sun is something else. I mean, the sun isn't a planet. It's a bubbling ball of nuclear fusion and plasma and heat and all that. So it's just, it's science that we don't have a lot of information about, and, we're learning more about it every day, and it's just more amazing every day. And I think that, in the conference I was watching yesterday about the solar orbiter from ESA, is that the more they find out, the more they don't know, and the more they need to know. So, it just keeps raising more and more questions, which is, that's what science is really, isn't it? So very, very exciting times for, sun science.
Yeah, and for those who are listening, Caroline actually does sit down for hours and hours watching YouTube videos and watching live presentations, and she's right into this.
The thing is, I think I'll just get a snippet, but I end up just get sucked right in. Because you know why? These scientists are just so passionate about it, and they make you passionate about it. They make you interested in it. And, and they have so many beautiful pictures and videos and things, and they present it in a way that we can understand, which is great, because it gets everybody, the wider community, interested. And that's what science should be, sharing of information. So, I just think they're wonderful. Really good presentations. Highly recommended.
Yeah, it's good. Well, look, you can spend hours on it. That's fine, because a lot of my students admit to me they spend hours on TikTok videos. So at least you're learning something, something that advances humanity.
I don't know what TikTok is.
I'm sure people listening know what. Yeah,
for our generation, TikTok's a kind of biscuit.
Is it covered in chocolate sometimes? Yeah.
Speaking of food, you had us at caramel, by the way. So good job there. Describing the sun as caramel, that's a good job.
Thank you.
All right. I was going to try and fit in a joke about going to the sun at night when it's cooler, but I won't. So let's roll on from there.
Okay.
Thanks for that, Caroline. That was brilliant. So let's move on to our next topic. So this is going to be in the something personal category.
Anything about me?
You were born in Phoenix. You went to school in Tempe. You're an only child. Your favorite show is something called The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And your favorite book is Kendall Jenner's Instagram feed.
How did you know all that?
So for today's something personal, I was thinking, like, Jared and I did speak about what we did on the school holidays, but now that the school holidays are all over, our kids are back at school and we're all working, and life goes back to the way it is for about 10 months of the year, I was thinking about how we continue to build our relationship with our kids, because holidays are great times to go out and you've got more time. But what else do we do, I guess, to grow our relationship with our kids? Our relationship with our kids is linked to the faith life of our kids as well. So if we're close to our kids, then they see our faith, they see our goodness when we're displaying our goodness, which I hope is most of the time, but they learn a lot from us, and it can be from activities that we do and things that we do together that we're involved in. So I thought maybe some things that we do to foster our relationship with our kids. And for people who are listening, I'm going to flag this now. If you have ideas about things that you do that foster a good relationship with your kids, then we want to hear that as well, because I think the more we share, the better it is. I know parents can feel lost sometimes. Now, the only caveat is that three of us have young children. We don't have teenagers. My son is on the verge of becoming a teenager. Maybe he's another year away from that. So, I mean, my thinking behind this, having no experience as a teenage parent, or as a parent of teenagers, I should probably say. Let's get that right. I'm interested in continuing my relationship with my son, because I know that teenagers do get a little bit less interested in mum and dad as they get older, for a while anyway, speaking from personal experience of how I grew up. It's setting the foundation so that your kids know that you're always there for you. So, Jerry, I might throw it over to you first. What are some of the things that you do to foster good relationships with your kids?
All right. So, I think late last year, I think episode 19 of our podcast, we talked about faith, things that we do with our kids to sort of foster faith. So, I won't recover those sort of things because they, to me, they're intrinsically linked. Growing a bond with them and growing their faith are almost one and the same. But so, I've picked a few things that we do that are, I suppose, you know, less faithy, if you like, or less linked to faith. So the first one, yes, we're going back to normal, but we like to take the occasional family holiday during school term. Like you said, we got young kids, so that's still available to us. They're not going to miss out on any, too important stuff at school. Caitlin already knows her alphabet, so she's set for the rest of primary school, I'd say. But we are able to sort of, I try and avoid the school holidays, might go, you know, the week after or the week before when it's still either winding down or just starting up. And we'll just take maybe a 2 or 3 day break. So, you know, part of the week is still school and work and part of the week is just holiday, tacking it onto a weekend. Obviously, people, vendors and that are trying to get people into their holiday houses and hotels. So they'll generally drop the price a little as it's not quite school holidays. And it also means, like I said last podcast, with the day trips during teacher and staff days, it's a little less crowded. So we might end up going down to a beach resort in a warm part of the year, but because it's not school holidays, it's rather empty.
Which
is always a good thing when you just don't like the big crowds and want to actually do things rather than queue for them. So definitely family holidays. We'd like to do a few a year. It's certainly not really feasible, but it's certainly something we'd like to do. Getting a bit closer to home, probably where the rest of these things are going to be sort of focused. We like to play, there's four of us in our family, we like to play 4-player board games. So one that gets a lot of play is Uno. And then a couple of more niche ones. So there's one which is called Enchanted Forest, which is basically takes fairy tales, hides them on a board, and you've got to go around the board finding them and then go to a specific place at the end of the board to then try and remember where you found them and accumulate them that way. And another one which I think you've had a bit of experience with, Lindsay, is Sushi Go.
Sushi Go, yes.
Which is a delicious game. It's hard to play if you're hungry because...
Oh, yes.
It's basically pictures on cards of various sushi and other Japanese dishes, which we are all very partial to.
Yes.
But it's basically a points accumulation game. So certain cards are worth certain points. They mix better with others, or if you get too many of them, the game says you feel sick and you lose points because you eat too much of a certain food. And all of the... both the kids, 7 and 4 years old, but they're both able to play and quite often win, I think. Last podcast we talked about a games day that you came to, Lindsay.
Yes.
One of the games we played was Sushi Go, and of the 7 of us who were playing, so there was 5 adults and my 2 kids, and the 2 kids were the winners.
Yeah, get onto your Amazon accounts now and buy Sushi Go. Yeah. Oh no, Sushi Go Party. Yeah. Actually, no. Get onto Amazon Smile, select SQPN, then buy Sushi Go Party. But yeah, it's a great game to bond around. It's a lot of fun, lots of laughter, and
And it's easy enough that kids are able to pick it up because it's got bright coloured pictures.
Yep.
Each different kind of food is clearly coloured and marked. So even if you can't read or you don't know what the actual food is, you know what it symbolises. So definitely board games in our family.
And it's one way that kids can play with their food as well without getting into trouble. Sorry.
Uh-huh. Nice one.
Yeah, you're welcome, everyone.
Full of dad jokes today.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Another one which might be a little... partly cliche and partly you're really going to pick that, is the weekly food shopping trip. So Sometimes we have a bit of trouble getting the kids interested to even come, and I've often had to go by myself because no one else is interested in going. But once we're out of the house and actually there, it turns into a real family bonding exercise just by the nature of it. So the local supermarket we shop at has shopping trolleys, very small ones, so kid size really. So we generally have a 3-trolley procession going around the shops, like a father duck. I'm trying to herd them and not try and get them out of everyone else's way. But they'll have their own foods that they get. So they might decide that, you know, James might decide that he's just going to get green food and Caitlin will get orange food. And so they'll have, depending on how much veggies we're getting that week, he'll have a stacked trolley and she won't have all. No, actually, orange is a good colour because you get oranges, mandarines and other fruit. But nice. We've had it where I think James, he picked the green and his trolley was full, and Caitlin picked, I can't remember what the colour was, something obscure, maybe like pink. And she had like one thing. It's like, Dad, you're not buying any pink things.
Turquoise.
Cherry ripes, Turkish delights.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, all the good stuff. Caroline's there. Caroline's into
watermelon.
It.
Watermelon. Yeah.
Probably, I think that's about all she had, one watermelon and nothing else.
Trolley full of watermelons.
But and then Caitlin's getting old enough that she can read that some of the things, so she'll have the list either on the phone or a bit of paper, and she'll be crossing off the things as we get them. And you know, we all sort of work as a team rather than them sitting in the trolley like they used to when they were younger, where they don't fit now, sitting in the trolley and saying, are we done yet? We're in aisle one of 13 or 14. Are we nearly finished now? Yeah, what do you think? Shopping. And then one final one, obviously, in our last podcast, I mentioned the rabbits, so they're certainly a family bonding exercise, is to do things with them. So either holding, patting them, or trying to get them to eat out of our hands, which they're not very interested in. They're a bit snobby. but taking them outside and you know, just sort of being together with them and you know, certainly just almost whittling away the afternoon or the evening just with, you know, with the rabbits. So, yeah, there's a few things there. Certainly pets, if not rabbits, certainly a good way to bond with family members. Before the rabbits, it was creepy crawlies and digging them out of the ground for the kids to hold while I was weeding. So certainly the rabbits are a step up from that. But any sort of animal or creature, I think, can foster a way to bond with your children. Yeah, you'll know things about these animals that your children won't just by the nature of it. So, and that they'll all, as long as you can show them that, and except for perhaps spiders and mosquitoes, that animals, you know, smaller animals are to be treasured and to be looked after and to be they're special.
That's great. What I love especially about those is that they're based on, well, some of them are based on everyday activities like the shopping and everything. I think that's really good. Really simple ways that you can bond with your kids. Caroline, how about you? You've got a bit of a list here. So tell us some of the things that you've, about some of the things you listed here.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, I want to add to your shopping trolley experience thing. we've had to buy a few hardware and do-it-yourself items. So we go to, you know, our big hardware store called Bunnings, and, you know, they've got the kids' trolleys there too. So my boys get one each, but it doesn't really work that well because they kind of like run around the shop and push them down the aisle. And yeah, it's not always a good experience.
Oh yeah. When I say I'm trying to keep them in line, it doesn't mean they are keeping in line. They love it when there's a free aisle because they will take a run up. James is not very upper bodily strength. Caitlin will take a run up and sort of hold the trolley and yeah, use it as a races with
it. A bit of roadrunner antics down the aisle.
So I don't think I've got any more control over my children than you do over yours. The trolley's like it allows them to be a loose cannon.
Oh yeah, it's always dangerous. It's fun and yes, bonding, but dangerous. But anyway, luckily luckily these shops are quite forgiving and large, so there's plenty of room to muck around if you want to. It's just the other people shopping that I'm worried about. Anyway,
I say to them just before can I just quickly interrupt? Like I say to my kids, if you're going to run into someone, run into me.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No. Anyway. With our bonding, I was talking about the sun before, and I did watch some NASA videos and sun videos. And after the NASA video, because there were pictures of the sun, the kids wanted to watch more sun videos. So I did look up the Soho, and they had some really nice YouTube videos of different colors of the sun. They mix the different wavelengths together, so you get, you know, and they're all in videos, so you get to see the sun spinning round and the loops of the magnetic fields and everything. And the boys were just mesmerized by that. So I think my love of space and the sun is kind of rubbing off on them, because they were actually really sitting quiet and watching and asking me about the sun, and, you know, and then yet this morning Frankie woke up and said, "Mom, I really love the sun." I thought, "Oh yeah, that's great. Okay, cool." So that's, you know, I think sharing interests is a really good way of bonding with your kids. Not just my interests, but their interests. So, like, I think Lindsay, we've got this in common that our kids love Lego. So, you know, the boys, I'll get them a set, or they get one for Christmas, or we've got actually a few unopened boxes from birthdays and Christmas, because they all kind of happen around the same time. So, you know, we sit down and we'll make sets together, or, you know, I'll encourage them, or, and, you know, I've been known to buy a set for me. So we'll sit down and they'll encourage me making Lego, you know, "Good job, mummy." And, you know, so that's really sweet. You know, we love to go, you know, walking in nature. We did that yesterday. We went to Listerfield Lake Park and, you know, just had some nice leisure time, you know, relaxing leisure time. It was a warm day, so we, you know, put our feet in the water and, you know, just had some quiet time together, which was nice, watching the ducks and, you know, something less, you know, stimulating, you know, because you can't always be on the go, you know, you need that downtime. And one thing I've really enjoyed doing, especially lately, because Harry's just started school, he's 5 years old, and it's his first year of school with Frankie, and, you know, Frankie's 8 years old, and Frankie used to love telling me about his day, and I still love to ask him about his day and what he's done, and, you know, when on the days where he doesn't just go, "It was good," or "I don't remember."
That's what I get. "How was school?" "Yes. Good."
"Good," yeah. You know, sometimes they'll actually start the conversation. They'll say, "Oh, you know, today, Mummy, we did this," and that's where I'll take it from usually. And, you know, Frankie will tell me what he did, or he loves math. So he said, "Oh, we did this, this, and this today." And now Harry's started doing it, which is so cute. You know, my friend this, you know, said this, or he's got another friend called Harry who's in grade 6. So he's at the top of the school. So they've got them together and they've made them buddies. And, he'll tell me what he and Harry did, and, you know, he'll tell me what he and his friends did and what he learned. And Harry's the kind of guy who's, you know, quiet most of the day, or apart from "Mummy, mummy, mummy." But then he'll just come out with a random conversation, and it will be usually about what happened at school that day. And I think that's really sweet. So, I think having communication with your children and being open to discussion and knowing, you know, letting them know that you're there for them to talk to about things, and, you know, if they have trouble at school or with friends, or, you know, Frankie's a little bit, sometimes he gets a little bit anxious. So, you know, he'll come to me and I just, you know, I let him talk to me about whatever's troubling him. So, yeah, just, I think communication and just letting your kids know that, you know, they can trust in you and have you there is a really good way to bond. You know, just, yeah, I think that's a really special part of being a parent as well, you know. So, yeah, those are my things, and I'll let you go into yours, Lindsay.
Yeah. And you've, like, that's what I'm getting at as well with what you've both said so far. It's just about them knowing that you're there, like, no matter what stage in their life. And like I said, you know, I'm a tiny bit nervous about when Damien becomes a teenager and will he remember all the things that Dad said about being there and things like that. And I think that's the idea, is just building that foundation of trust in whatever we do. I was listening to an expert somewhere on some show as well. Just getting on that thing about, because I was getting frustrated where I say, "Damien, how was your day at school?" "It was good." And then there'd be awkward silence. And what they said was, is one thing you can do is you can ask them about their friends. So I know who some of his friends are. So I'd be like, "Oh, so what did Christian get up to today?" And then he'd be like, "Oh, you won't believe what Christian did." You know, and then it starts from there. You know,
That's great.
So, yeah. And so those are good ways, conversation starters as well. And I said to Damien, like, because, you know, he's just started grade 6. It's his final year of primary school. So again, "How was your day at school?" He goes, "It was good." I said, "Now, Damien, you're in grade 6. You know that's not enough anymore." So then he starts telling me about his day, and he's actually he's actually starting to tell me more detail of things that he does during the day, which is really good. So now I've gone with you're a bit more grown up now, son, so you need to say more. So that, you know, he took that on board. But some other things, the Lego thing is really good, and this is something really that I guess really it picked up a bit of speed this year with Damien's, and the catalyst for that was that our good friends Lino and Bernie, who are Damien's godparents, they bought, and I feel a bit childish saying this, but for Christmas they spent a bit of extra money and they bought for me and Damien for Christmas, was it a Christmas and birthday, because they're all the same, roughly about the same time. They bought us a Lego Millennium Falcon, which I'm looking at right now and adoring. It's so beautiful. And they said, you know, it's for both of you. So Damien and I decided we would build it together. So it could never be built unless the two of us were sitting together doing it. And so I think there were about 9 little packets of Lego in there that, you know, so it's like 9 stages of building. So we take turns, you know, so I would take turns building while he'd get the pieces ready and show me the instructions. And then we'd switch like that. And we never fought once, which was really good. It's like, that's not where it goes, don't do that. Yeah, we were actually really good. But it's good because while we were doing that, we were just talking about things too, which was really nice. So just that, and, you know, a model like that, it took us days and days to build. I think people have sat down for, I think, 6 or 7 hours in a row and just done it. But we just did it over about 4 or 5 days, and it was some good bonding time to do that. The other thing is, Damien has been bugging me about getting a pet, like, for years. And I'm just not really in the mood to get a cat or a dog, just because our house is a bit smaller and I just don't want the responsibility of, yeah, go Jerry.
What about a rabbit?
Yeah, well, you're the big endorser for rabbits now, aren't you? Yeah.
You don't want 4 cats, Lindsay?
Oh. No, I don't really want 4 cats. that's your expertise. I don't know if I could put in the time. Like, if you have a dog, you've got to walk the dog. You know, dogs need a lot of attention, you know, and I just don't.
Dogs do.
Yeah. And I know that even if you get a pet for your child, you're going to be the primary person who's looking after them. Yeah, and then cats, you know, I didn't want to have to, you know, and I know you love cats, so this is not a slight against cats, Caroline, but yeah, I didn't want to go cleaning kitty litters and doing all that kind of stuff and then having an animal telling me what's what around the house and things like that. So, yeah.
Don't talk badly about my cat, Lindsay.
Yeah, I know. I hope they're not listening. I hope they're not listening to this podcast.
Not this time.
Yeah. We haven't looked at the demographic of who's listening. Yeah. We assume they're all human, but.
Yeah, there's 4 less cats on this episode. I was happy to go with fish. So we talked about fish and I said, now Damien, like, if we do get fish, you have to help me look after them. And he did, and he committed to it, and he's doing really well. So we bought a small fish tank and we put 2 fish in it and, you know, a couple of snails and some catfish. Because what happened was we put the 2 fish and we thought, oh, this is a bit boring and it's a bit small, you know. And so we thought, all right, let's add some more fish. So we put 2 catfish in there. It's like, oh, that's looking pretty good. Let's put some 4 snails. Yeah, so then we had 4 fish and then we added 2 snails. So we had 6 little creatures and it's like, oh, now it's a bit too small for them. So we ended up buying a larger fish tank. So I've got a 235-liter fish tank now. And we've got, how many fish? We've got 4, 5, 6, 7. We've got 7 fish and 3 snails in there. And they're not crowded. They've got lots of room. But what's good is, again, Damien and I, we do the work on it together. So Damien is responsible for feeding the fish every day. And with fish, the one big thing you have to do every week is change some of the water. So you've got to change a third of the water every week. And you've got to test the water using these like test kits with chemicals and whatever. And it's a good learning experience for Damien. And, you know, we've worked out a system where we can empty the tank out through the closest window now instead of me carrying buckets through the house and things like that. But it's something we do together. It's a two-man job when you clean it that way. So there's some bonding there. And Alexander, my almost 2-year-old, he'll be 2 in a couple of days after this podcast comes out. So he's starting to help feed the fish and he loves it. So we break the little fish pellets up and he throws it in over the top and he watches them float to the bottom. Yeah, and he loves that. So so that's really good. Another thing is Damien started karate in 2000 and I'm going to say 17, I think it was, 16 or 17. It's one of those. So he started it and I, you know, we encouraged him to keep going and it was great. And then one day, about 3 months in, he goes, Dad, you should do karate too. I'm like, oh, I haven't got time, son. And he kept getting at it. And there is one thing I've learned about him especially, and it's probably might apply to other kids, is that when they invite you to something, say yes. Because they're not saying, do karate with me. They're actually inviting you into a deeper relationship with them, I think, anyway. Now, Jerry, I'm not saying you have to go and do gymnastics with Caitlin. Don't worry, okay?
Learn how to do the splits and never walk again.
But I thought, all right, karate is something I could probably handle. Right? You know, just let people beat you up and learn a few moves. That's okay. And we have been doing it together ever since. And now he was in a different class to me because they have junior and senior classes. But this year, we both got – so at the end of last year, we both got our blue belt. So we passed our blue belt grading. And because of that, we're both in the senior advanced class now. So now we go to class all the time together. We've had a few gradings together over the years too, which is good just because of where we're both at level-wise and whatever. So that's been really good because it's something we bond over. And when we're not at karate, because it's getting a bit more serious now, we have to do a bit more practice. So we practice things at home together. Now, just so that people... you know, don't want to give you the wrong impression. We don't go hitting each other at home. It's more like we practice, you know, it's practicing certain moves and forms and combinations and things like that. But we do it together. And when he forgets a particular thing, you know, I probably remember it. And when I forget something, he's remembered it. So it's been really good in that way that we're able to bond over that. And the last one I wanted to mention is bedtime stories and prayer. So, you know, obviously we pray with our kids before we go to bed, but bedtime stories is a great one. And I don't mean sitting down and reading a book, although we do that. Years ago when Damien was younger, he said something like, can you tell me a story about a whatever? And so what happened was I started developing stories, you know, based on, you know, I'd be like, give me an idea, you know? So he would say things like, one he made up was a frog and a spider. So we invented these characters called Jeremy the Frog, his sister Cinderella, and their friend Cindy the Spider. And they go on adventures together. So that became a thing. I've told like a dozen stories and we made up a Christmas special at one stage. And, you know, like Cindy the Spider is like this Spider-Man kind of character who flicks webs everywhere and saves the day. And so, and that's just because he made it up. We talked about the Good Samaritan once. And then he said, Dad, can you tell me a story about the Crazy Samaritan? So that became a thing. There's this, you know, this guy who tries to do good but doesn't get it right all the time and things like that. So... And then because of karate, there was Karate Cricket, you know, who's this cricket who goes and beats up bad guys and has a frog who's a mentor or something like that. I forgot exactly now, but, we were reading Lord of the Rings and he loved Gollum. So he goes, tell me a story about Gollum. So we created these stories called Gollum's Day and we just like make up the stuff that Gollum does in his day. So, yeah. So he loves that. And like, you know, the problem is like most times when I take him to bed now, he goes, Dad, tell me a story. I'm like, oh, son, I've got to think of something first. So, maybe you can tell your kids, what do you want me to tell you a story about? And they can just make up the characters and you just run with it. And so, yeah. And then I just relate it to things that I see Damien during the day. And like, you know, he finds that funny and things like that. So I'm now a big fan of telling, you know, bedtime stories based on what he wants. I'm conscious that he'll be a teenager soon and we're probably not going to do that anymore, but I've got time with Alexander to work on that too, so that's been good. I might just add to that Alexander, so I take Damien to bed and Alexander won't have a bar of it. There's no way he's not going to be involved. So when I'm taking Damien to bed, we both hear the clomp, clomp, clomp and the ha, 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 ha as he's running down the hallway to come to bed. So he lies in between us now as he, you know, being a cheeky boy that he is. And so sometimes I whisper the story and so he just lies there quietly looking at the ceiling, listening to the story too. So it's quite good. He still loves your Topsy the Cat story, though, Caroline. That's a good one. We have to read that. So
that makes Auntie very happy.
Yep. Free plug for Caroline. Topsy the Cat. FrankieandHarry'sBookshelf.com. Is that the way it is? .au. Go for
that's
it.
That's true. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Buy it on Amazon.com. Really... Amazon/smile. SQPN. There you go.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. It is a good story. Many kids like it.
Yeah,
if I do say so myself. But Lindsay, I want to hear more about the Crazy Samaritan. I think that would be a good one.
Maybe I'll record a podcast with just a...
love it.
That could be a patron-only episode.
Yes. How cool would that be?
One day. Yes. All right. So I think we'll finish it there for today. So we just want to thank everyone for listening to episode of the 26 of the Catholics of Oz. And we'd like to thank especially our patrons who make it possible for us to create Catholics of Oz. So today we want to thank Josette S, Pete B, Mary H, Noel L, and Jeffrey H. Because of their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all of our other shows at StarQuest to continue. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Also, we'd love to know your thoughts from today's episode. So any topics that we've discussed today, you can send your feedback by visiting sqpn.com/oz, spelled O-Z, And you can find our show notes and links from today's episode there as well. We're also on Facebook through SQPN. So if you look for SQPN on Facebook or facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, our episodes get posted there and you're welcome to post your comments. And that counts for Twitter as well. But also we have our own Facebook page, which is facebook.com/CatholicsOfOz. And we've had a couple of people join us and comment there, and we'd love for more people to come and join our community and tell us about our episodes. It's a closed group, so you can say whatever you want. We didn't reason, but yeah, obviously. but also, you could email us at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you. It was fun being back.
And Jerry, thanks for your contributions as well.
Excellent. I'm glad you've been a part of it.
And once again, I'm Lindsay Sand. Thank you for joining us for episode 26 of The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.